I know that our brother Ken has prepared a message for each one of us today. I'd ask that each one of us would open our hearts and our minds to those words that he has to say and how they apply in our lives. Now I ask for your careful and your prayerful attention for our brother Ken Orr.
Thank you, Dwayne. I'd ask an interest in your silent prayers this morning. I feel the Lord has given me a message that I especially feel the burden of standing here this morning. I was asked what the title of my sermon was, and I had to stop and think a moment. It was really going to cover a lot of territory, and you could probably preach about 5 or 6 sermons out of what I hope to bring today. But generally, it's our relationship with Christ. It's about families. It's about our church family. It's about Christ's relationship with us, our relationship with Christ. Kind of, hopefully, to focus on what we need to be doing to accomplish the will of God. Maybe thinking beyond our everyday lives. But I'm going to be preaching about our everyday lives, but kind of what we do today to prepare ourselves for the future. In our studies at my house, we've been talking about faith a little bit, and that faith is an action word. It's a verb. And in our discussion, we've been talking about Moses and his reluctance to fulfill the word of God, to fulfill his direction. And different scriptures that talk about putting our faith into action. You know, Moses was 80 years old when the Lord told him to go to Pharaoh. Presumably, you know, we don't know who this Pharaoh was, at least I don't. Presumably it was his brother-in-law, his stepbrother. Somebody he'd grown up with. You know, but when we stopped and thought about it, 80 years before that, the Lord had placed Moses in this basket, had placed him in the king's palace. He grew up. He had access to the palace 80 years later. So what we do today, what God asks us to do today, may have a bearing a year from now, 5 years from now, 80 years from now on God's plan. But God placed Moses in this specific place for a purpose. When he gave the command for the house of Israel to leave Egypt, he had somebody in place that had access to the palace that could go to the Pharaoh and say, "Let my people go." So what we do today and how we follow God's commandments today may have a bearing that we know nothing about a year from now, a month from now, a week from now. It's how we teach our children. It's how we raise our children. It's our interaction with our families, with our brothers and sisters in the gospel, all preparing us for a service. You know, we've heard lots of sermons lately about separating ourselves from the world and how the world has changed. You know, God's perfect creation has been changed. And sometimes we lose sight of God's perfect command for us. Our perfect relationship with each other, our perfect relationship with Him. Sometimes we lose sight of that because of the world. Because the world has changed, it's caused us to change. Not as aware of sin. Not as aware of our goal. Not as aware of the strictness of God's command to us. I was just telling Brother Dwayne before the excuse me, he opened the service this morning. I was a little upset with him last week. He used some of my scriptures. And I said, you know, he's going to preach my sermon, and I'm going to have to, you know, the Lord's going to have to direct me to a different area. But he kind of went around what I want to talk about in some of his scriptures. I'm going to use the 5th and 6th chapters of Ephesians this morning. It's the only scriptures I plan to use. But I have a question. I just want you to think about it for a moment. You know, kind of answer it to yourself. Does your life reflect Christ at all times? When you leave here this afternoon and you go and do whatever we're going to do, does your life reflect Christ? Can people see Christ in your life? Can He see Christ in our families, in a relationship with our families, in a relationship with our brothers and sisters? Can the world see Christ? The Lord has a certain lifestyle that He wants us to live. It's not the lifestyle that the world dictates. It's not the values that the world dictates. He has some values, and He has a life that He wants us to live. One that brings praise to His name. One that reflects the countenance of Christ in our everyday living. That people can see Christ. That we can witness without saying a word, that our life is a witness for Jesus Christ. Are we that way at all times? Or do we allow the cares and the concerns and our personal feelings sometimes to enter in and detract us? Those of us who were baptized, and our future young sister who will be baptized this week, we made a promise. We made a promise to God that we were going to keep His commandments. We did. We gave our lives to Christ. Whether we realized it or not, we were giving up something. We gave up our old life. We gave up our own old ambitions, our old feelings, our old desires. We gave them up. Those things of the world we gave up, and we took upon us a new life. We took upon us Christ. You know, He paid for us. We are His possession. He bought and paid for us. We're no longer our own. Oh, He didn't take away our free will and our agency, but we are no longer our own. We are Christ. And we made that promise to Him that I'm yours. You can do with me as you see fit. And I will allow you to do with me as you see fit. So we made a promise to keep God's commandments. You know, and I think we do a fairly good job. We do, for the most part. Especially the big ones, you know. I don't think any of us are murderers or thieves. I don't think any of us live riotous lives. But what about our relationship with each other? What about our relationship with Christ? What about our family relationships? What about Christ's relationship with us? You know, and it's all intertwined. His relationship, when we read through 5th and 6th chapters of Ephesians here, we're going to see a relationship that Christ has with us, that we have with each other, that husbands have with their families, that mothers and fathers have with their children. It's all intertwined. The example that Christ set in His relationship with us is a blueprint for our relationship with everyone else. Our attitudes, our feelings, our relationships. We have to have that walk with Christ to be His chosen people. So, Ephesians chapter 5, I'm going to begin at the first verse. And this is kind of it's a little different for me this morning. It's going to be kind of a word study. We're going to go through here and we're going to talk a little bit about Greek definitions of words and how it applies to us and what it means to our life. Anyway, in the first verse of the fifth chapter of Ephesians, Paul is setting the stage for what he's going to talk about. He says, "Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children." That's his command to us. Be ye followers. That word is imitators. Be imitators of Christ, of God. We're to imitate him. And walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and has given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. We're to have that same love for our brothers and sisters as Christ had for us. He gave his life for us. We're to give our life for him. We're to give our life for our brothers and sisters. Not many of us will be required to give our physical life, but we're to give our life. We're to have that love for our brothers and sisters that Christ had for us. We're to offer our lives as a sacrifice to God, as an offering to God. Crucifying, so to speak, the lust of the flesh, the old man, the old woman, the old child. To have that same love for each other as Christ has for us. It's a blueprint. A blueprint. We cannot be any different in our life, in our walk, than Christ is to us. This whole relationship of Christ and the church is our blueprint for our relationships with each other. It's the same. It's the same. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, uncleanness, impurity, all impurity and covetousness, that's an extreme desire to acquire or possess. He says, let it not be once named among you as become a saint. There's not to be any impurity in our midst. There's not to be any extreme desire to acquire the things of this world, to possess the things of this world, but not to be named once among us. No impurities. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. Foolish talking, silly talk. It's more than just talking about a ball game. He's not saying we can't sit down and talk about a ball game or a cooking class or crocheting or whatever we talk about. He's not saying that. He's talking about silly talk. Foolishness. Or jesting. And the jesting that Paul was talking about was lewd or vulgar coarse language or actions. Those things which are not convenient, those things which are not proper, were not to be named among us. But rather giving thanks. He says, which are not convenient, not proper. All these things are not proper. It's not just part of them are proper and part of them, but all these things, this filthiness and foolish talking and jesting are not proper. We can't take in, well, this is a good one and this is a bad one. They're not proper. They're not, the whole thing is not proper. For in this ye know that no whoremonger, no unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. The whoremonger, extreme indulgence and sensual pleasure. You know, we just have to turn on the TV and be involved in that. You know, it's as simple as that. Or picking up a magazine. Unclean, morally impure. These are people that are not going to inherit the kingdom of heaven. Covetous. Different word than what we used back for covetousness, can't even say it. I'm not even going to try. Covetous person, eager for gain, to have what belongs to others. an idolater, image worshiper, or servant? Are we slaves to this world? Do we have images that we hold up before us that we're slaves to, that we actually worship? Whether it be our job, our car, our family, whatever it may be that we worship or become a servant to, a slave to, let it not be named among us. And these people are not going to inherit the kingdom of heaven. Let no man deceive you with vain words. For because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Let no man deceive you to delude you, to belittle the true meaning of sin. All we have to do is walk out this door and people try to deceive us. They've diminished the consequences of sin. They've taken sin out of the vocabulary. There's real, you know, when you look at God's word and look at the morals of this nation, they're not even in the same game. Not even in the same ballpark. But they will try to teach us that there's things that are, well, there's no harm in that. You're not hurting anybody. What's the difference, they're going to say? But to God, there is a difference. And there's kind of an unwritten law. And you could find it written if you searched it out. But kind of an unwritten law that when we do the things that God commands us to do, we have His blessing. We have His Spirit upon us to improve our lives. And we're better for it. Just simply because we do what's right. So there is a difference. You can look around at our brothers and sisters in the gospel and you can see differences in our countenance, in our life, than you do when you look out in the world and see the results of people deceiving us because of the unimportance of sin. Verse 7. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. A co-participant. Let's not participate with these people in the world and the things that they do. You know, Paul in Romans, he said, not only those that do the things that he mentioned, but those that have pleasure in them are guilty. We may not do them. We may not physically be involved in it, but if we have pleasure in it, if we watch it, if we enjoy hearing about it, we're participating. And we're guilty. We are guilty. But you know, in verse 8, he kind of puts it in perspective. He says, for you were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord, walk as children of light. We were. Before we took upon us the name of Christ by baptism, we were the children of darkness. But now, we are the children of light. The light of Christ. The light of the Spirit that's in us. And he says, we're to walk as children of light. Not as children of darkness. Not opposite what God says, but as children of light, keeping His commandments. For the fruit, for the works, for the deeds of the Spirit, that working of the Spirit within us, this is what it produces, is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. These things of the world are not all goodness and not all righteousness and not all truth, but the things of God are. Goodness, that moral quality, that virtue that we possess. Righteousness, it's a character or quality of being right or just. Simple two-word definition for righteousness is right living. We live right before God. We keep His commandments. He says in verse 10, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. Proving, testing with the object of approving it. Of saying it. We test it. If we test these principles of God, we will prove that they're right. That we will prove that they have the benefits that God has promised. That we will prove that we have better lives. It's testing to approve. We're going to approve. We're going to prove these things. We're going to approve. We're going to say, yay, they're good. acceptable, well-pleasing. These things are well-pleasing to God. The opposite is that the things that we do of the world are not well-pleasing to God. We don't want God's displeasure. We really don't. Verse 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Have no company. Have no participation with the unfruitful works of darkness. Unfruitful, barren, without fruit. To reprove them. To expose them. To rebuke them. It's so important that our life shows something different. We don't have to get in people's faces and argue with them, but we can show by our conduct, a simple word, a simple statement, that we don't approve of that. That's not right. That's not what the Lord has said. And we owe it. We really owe it to the people of the world to bring it to their attention. We have to give people the opportunity to reject us. We have to give people the opportunity to say no. So many times, I've been guilty of it, and perhaps every one of us have been guilty, that we made up people's minds before them. You know, I have no sense of talking to them. They're not going to listen to me. Haven't we all said that to ourselves? Without giving them the opportunity to say no. Reprove the works of darkness. Be against it. Be against it. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. It's a shame to speak of those things that are done in secret. And you know, works of darkness a lot of times are done in secret, aren't they? Those secret combinations, those secret things. People, things that people try to hide from the eyes of the world, from the eyes of the law. Isn't it true? Somebody in our congregation is not living the life that they're supposed to be living. What do? They hide it. They avoid us. They don't associate. You know, we're ashamed. We're ashamed. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. That word sleepeth really means indifference. Arise from our indifference. Is it really something that means something to us, or are we kind of indifferent to it? Oh, I'll live it. I'll live a life that Christ wants me to live when it's convenient, when I'm around other people that think the same as me. Arise from that indifference and be determined in your own hearts and your own minds that you're going to live this gospel 24/7. Doesn't matter where, when, how difficult, how much we may not want to at that particular moment. And Christ never said that we want to do it 100% all the time. We get tired. We're in situations that is difficult, that we're embarrassed, that or people may point their finger and mock us. Or it's just too hard. I'm tired. I don't have the will. You know, indifference. That's it. We have to not be indifferent. See then that you walk circumspectly, diligently, carefully, exactly. Not as fools, but as wise. Not as the unwise. Let's not walk as the unwise, but walk as wise, diligently keeping his commandments, carefully seeking out what we're to do, and exactly following his commandments. There's not much room for leeway in God's commands. You either follow them or you don't. We can make excuses for ourselves. We can justify our actions. But when it comes right down to it, we either follow them or we don't. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. Make good use of the time you have. Making the most of it. Redeeming that time. Make the most of today. Because the days are evil. We're going to talk a little bit about evil here later, but the day that we live in is evil. Make the most of the time that God has given us. Today is the day that we work out our salvation before God. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. Don't be foolish, but understanding, perceiving, considering what the will of the Lord is. That's our duty. That's our goal, to daily seek what the Lord wants us to do. I'm going to skip down to verse 22, and I'm going to talk about wives and husbands, and husbands and wives, and fathers and mothers and children, and Christ and our church. You know, and I know when you read verse 22, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. That kind of doesn't rub us the right way sometimes. But that word submit, it doesn't by a long shot mean that you're under somebody's thumb. I want you to stop and think a minute about our relationship with God. It says that wives are to submit to their husbands as we do to Christ. So how do you feel about Christ being our Lord and our Master? Is it burdensome? Is it hurtful? Do we feel oppressed and suppressed and all that stuff? No, we don't. Don't we feel peace and comfort and joy and contentment and being protected? And that's the role of a husband with his wife, to make his wife feel protected, to comfort her, to strengthen her, to provide for her every need, just as Christ provides for our every need. Verse 23, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. That's the commandment to husbands, to love your wife. The wife is never commanded to love her husband. The husband is commanded to love his wife. Same word when you read that. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved. Same word. The same word. And it expresses God's deep and constant love for us and his interest in our lives. God's constant and deep love for us. That's the love that we have for our wife. Constant and deep. And an interest in their well-being. Christ has an interest in our well-being. He guides us. He directs us. He strengthens us. Same relationship that a husband has with his wife. Verse 26, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word. You know, as Christ gave his life for his church, we give our life for our wives. Same thing. We give everything that we have for the well-being of our wife and extending that to our family. That's our role. That's our duty. That's our responsibility. You know, and when we get to verse 33, it says that the wife is to reverence her husband. To reverence her husband. But I'm going to get to that. But why? Why would a wife reverence her husband? Regarding with great respect. Why would she have a great respect for her husband? Why would she honor her husband? Because he deserves it. Because he is the husband that Christ has commanded him to be, and now the wife feels completely content and safe and secure. That he might, verse 27, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle, or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. And I'm not going to get into that. That's a different, completely different sermon right here. But Christ is going to present His church to Himself without spot, without wrinkle, without blemish. Perfect. We're going to be presented perfect. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourished and cherished it, even as the Lord the church. Paul's not talking about a husband loving himself. He's not talking about that. He's not talking about that we're talking about hating ourselves. But when we became a husband and wife, no more twain, but one. He's talking about a man hating his wife. No man has hated his flesh. We're one flesh. No man hates his wife. No man despises his wife or loves her less. But he nourishes. He nourishes his wife. He cherishes his wife. He loves his wife as himself. One flesh, one person, one unit. So we as husbands are not going to do anything that's going to harm our wife. We're going to treat her with the respect and the dignity that she deserves. And because of that, the wife is going to follow God's commandments for her to take care of us. Basically, and not saying to wait on his hand and foot, but to fulfill the needs that we lack, to be an encouragement, to be a comfort, to be a helpmeet that God placed wives on this earth for, to be a helpmeet, someone who is worthy of her husband. And vice versa, that the husband is worthy of his wife. Verse 30, for we are members of his body, of his flesh and of his bones. And for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. One flesh, single, excluding all others. All others are not part of us now. They're all excluded. One flesh, one wife, one flesh, to the exclusion of all others. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. And the wife see that she reverence her husband. Reverence. Respect. Affection. Honor. But we as husbands, don't forget, we as husbands have to earn that respect. Chapter 6, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Listen attentively, children. That's what it said. Obey your parents. Listen attentively. Heed or conform to the command or authority. Parents have an authority over their children, and children are to obey their parents, to yield to that authority. And there's a reason. We learn obedience to God by being obedient to our parents. Simple as that. Obedience. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, that thou mayest live long on the earth. Honor your parents. Have a high respect for your parents. A high respect. We honor our parents by obeying them. We honor our parents by keeping their directions. Okay, we may have a bad parent. Yeah, we may. But we still honor the institution of parenthood. We honor the institution of the President of the United States. We may not particularly care for who's in office, but we honor that position. Children, honor the position of your parents. They may not always be right. They may not even be the best parent in the world, but honor their position. It's up to me as a parent to make sure that my children have reason to give me honor. That they have a reason. If we don't honor our parents, how are we ever going to honor authority? How are we ever going to honor God? It starts by honoring our parents. Young people, we are disrespectful to our parents. We are disrespectful to our God, and we are disrespectful to those around us when we spend 45 minutes every Sunday morning talking, not listening to the preacher. What you have to say, you may think is more important than what God has to say, but it's not. It disturbs me. It makes me angry because you don't respect me. You're not respecting the person sitting beside you or in front of you. We're not honoring our parents when we do that. Our parents didn't teach us to do that. Our parents don't sit there and talk through the whole service, hopefully. Let's honor our parents, let's honor God, and let's honor our brothers and sisters by being respectful. It's part of it. And ye fathers, verse 4, ye fathers, single parents, ye mothers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. We can provoke our children in many different ways. We can be too strict. We can be too lenient. We can be inconsistent. That's probably the most damaging thing that we can do to our children, is to be inconsistent. Our children have no bounds. They don't know what's right and what's wrong. Oh, today, Mom and Dad, they yelled at me for this. Why? They didn't yesterday. You know, consistency. We have to be consistent. God is consistent, isn't He? Does God one day allow us to do something and another day not? God is consistent. He's our model. He's our blueprint. God is consistent. We as parents must be consistent. And it's more than just how we raise our children. It's what we teach them. Do not provoke your children to anger against somebody else. You have a bad attitude about a brother or sister in the gospel. Don't teach your children to have that same attitude. Don't. We're provoking our children to anger when we teach them to not respect somebody else. You know, Brother so-and-so, I just didn't like what he preached today, and ragging on him all the way home in the car. Our children are listening to us, and what are they going to do? They're going to start doing it. They're going to start doing the same thing. I remember one time, and who it was and where it was, it doesn't matter. They got up and gave a testimony. Angry. Anger in their voice. Because of two families who had differences. Two families that were at odds. Something that happened, I'm guessing at least 50 years ago. And I guarantee you that if you had have asked that person, what is the problem between the two families? Oh, I don't know. Mom and Dad said something, or Uncle so-and-so had... Oh, they had no idea. But they were provoked either by their parents or somebody else to be angry. They were provoked. Don't do it. Provoke not our children to wrath. But bring them up in the nurture. Education, training, disciplinary correction. Bring them up in that nurture of the Lord. Admonition of the Lord, mild rebuke or warning. Don't be afraid to warn your children. Don't be afraid to discipline them. Don't be afraid to make them do as they're told. Call attention to. Admonition. Call attention. They do something wrong. Call their attention to it. Don't let them get away with it. Just like your ministry. You know, if we didn't call your attention to something that was wrong, you'd lose your respect for us. We wouldn't be doing our job. It's the same with parents. If we don't call their attention to what they're doing wrong, children will lose their respect. We're not doing our job. I'm going to drop down to verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Be strong. Be able. Be courageous. And in the power of His might. Not our own power. It's His might. It's His awesome power. Do you ever stop and think who we serve? When we get down on our knees and pray, when somebody comes up to be administered to, who are we calling on? We're calling on the power of the universe. He created it. He created us. And we have that power at our disposal. So we're not strong in our own strength. We are strong in the power of Him. His might, His power, His greatness. We're not alone. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Armor. I learned a new word. I didn't know what this word meant. And I don't even know if I wrote it down here right. Panoply? I believe is the word. Panoply. I never heard tell of it before. My wife, dictionary woman, probably knows what it is, but I don't. It's a complete suit of armor. I don't know why they couldn't have said that, but it's a complete suit of armor. A protective covering. You know, amongst the Greeks, among the Greek armies, it was a complete equipment used by a heavily armed infantry. That's what they called it. And that's us. We have this armor. It's our complete protection against our enemy. We're an infantry. We are an infantry. And we should be heavily armed because Satan, heavily armed, you know, he's not holding any punches. Put on that armor. Put on that armor of God. That you can stand. To be able to stand. To be able to abide. To be continue. To be steadfast. Without it, we can't. You know, this Greek army, if they left their armor at home, how long would they last? If we leave our armor at home, how long are we going to last out in the world? Or if we don't know what it is, or if we haven't put it on, or if we left part of it. You know, this Greek soldier, he knew exactly what every piece of armor was. Where it went, how he put it on. He didn't leave his barracks without it. Our troops over in Iraq, they don't leave their barracks without the complete armor. Can we do any less? Can we leave our homes without the complete armor on? And expect to stand? Can't. Can't do it. The wiles of the devil, the trickery, the craft, the deceit of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wrestle, to struggle in opposition. We don't wrestle against each other, but we struggle in opposition. We strive, we contend with principalities. Government. People who rule, beings who exercise rule, spiritual beings. It's a spiritual battle. It's not a physical battle. It's a spiritual battle. We may contend against physical people sometimes, or even governments or institutions, but our battle is spiritual. Against those powers, against those forces. And it denotes a freedom or right to act. God has given these opposing forces the freedom to act. To test us, perhaps. Perhaps. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. To withstand, to hinder, to oppose, to resist. We can do all we can to resist the evil. Evil in effect or influence denotes that which causes pain, sorrow, etc. It's malignant. One of the definitions was it was malignant, likely to cause death. This evil is likely to cause death, and we have to stand against it. We have to resist it. We just can't say, oh, well, I'm strong. I'm just going to ignore it. We have to resist it. We have to resist it. To stand, to abide, continue, to be steadfast. Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with truth and having on the breastplate of righteousness. Preparation, readiness, firm footing. We have to be ready, firm footing. You know, this Greek army, they didn't go out untrained. They didn't go out not ready. They were ready for battle. They were on firm footing because they'd been taught and they had learned and they'd practiced. They weren't novice. They were experienced warriors. Be ready. Be on firm footing. Above all, taking the shield of faith wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. Shield. Paul was referring to a large Roman shield made out of leather. It was a leather shield, the one he was referring to, from what I understand, able to turn aside swords, flaming arrows. It could turn them aside. Couldn't penetrate them. That's our shield, those fiery darts of the devil. To quench, to put them out. Not just turn them aside, but to put them out. Fiery, hot, painful. Those darts were not little darts. Spears, missiles, arrows, a javelin, able to cause great damage. Wicked. The darts of the wicked. Bad. The influence of Satan in our lives. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. That helmet is an encirclement of the head. It's a confidence. We can go in confidence of God's protection. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching therefore thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. Watching literally means to be sleepless. We don't have time to sleep. We don't have time to daydream. We have to be on our guard all the time. Be sleepless. Be vigilant. Be aware. And be as Christ. As He set the example, as He's given His life for us, and as He protects us, cares for us, let us protect and care for our families, for each other. Let us be diligent. Let's put on the whole armor. Let's not go out there unprepared. Let's put on that whole armor of God. In our daily lives, let's do the things that may be difficult. We may be tired, we may not feel good, we may not want to do it, but there's things in this life that have to be done. Things in this life that have to be done to raise our children. Things in this life that have to be done to spread the gospel. Things in this life that have to be done to serve God. And just as Moses, 80 years later, okay, Moses, here you are. I prepared you for this day. 80 years ago, I prepared you for this day. I put you where I want you. You may not want to do it. He had all sorts of excuses. He whined and complained and tried to talk God out of it, but God said, I prepared you. You're going to do it. And finally, Moses said, okay, I'll do it. Moses was right in some of the things. Pharaoh didn't listen to him. That was one of his, they're not going to listen. He's not going to let my people go. You know something? He was right. He was right. But you know, God made him do it for one reason. To show His power. Yeah, God knew that Pharaoh wasn't going to listen to Moses. Nephi and his brothers, when they went back to get the plates, they knew. They'd already been chased off twice. They knew that Laban could kill them. Wasn't going to give them the plates. They knew that. But what did Nephi say? He says, if God commands us to do it, he will prepare the way for it to be done. Delivered Laban right into his hands. God delivered Pharaoh into the hands of the Israel. He did. And they left. God did it. God did it. So, you may think that God can't use you. You may think you're weak, unimportant, but you know, God can use any one of us. Do we act like Moses sometimes? Do we argue with God? Do we say, I can't do that. That's too hard. That's too much. This guy's more qualified than I am. You know, this person can sing better than me. I don't want to do it. But you know, God can use whomever he wants. But it's up to us. It's up to us. Let's follow the blueprint. Let's follow the blueprint that Christ gave us. His relationship with us and our relationship with him. Let's follow that blueprint. Search the scriptures. Find out all the details. Be strong. Be courageous. And do it. Moses didn't want to do it. I'm sure that he wasn't looking forward to the prospect of going out in that hot old desert. But he did it. He certainly wasn't looking forward to the prospect of spending 40 years in the desert. But guess what? He did it. Difficult. Painful. Probably had his doubts from time to time. But just because it's hard doesn't mean we don't do it. God is preparing us. And things are going to happen. Things are going to happen shortly upon this earth and within the confines of the Church of Christ. We need to be ready. We need to be prepared. And you've heard it in sermon after sermon after sermon. Be ready. Be prepared. God is doing his work. Let's be ready. It was our brother Joel, I think, one time. He says, the train's going to leave. We're either going to be on it or not. So let's be prepared to be on that train, be ready for that service, and do the things that God has told us. From the big things down to the most smallest thing in our daily lives, we have to do it right. I thank you for your time.